Hello, and welcome to the West Valley News Digest. I'm Gayla Weigel Robinson, your volunteer reader. I start off with news of the week from the West Valley View, the newspaper of Avondale, Buckeye, Goodyear, Litchfield Park, and Tolleson. Approximately 20 minutes after the hour, I'll read the news from the Wickenburg Sun. And the half hour, I'll start reading news from Glendale, Peoria, and Surprise Independence. Some of those news stories I'll be reading. GLOW on Monroe returns. TUHSD responds to spending spree allegations. Glendale buys ground floor of VAI Resort Garage for nearly $18 million. Low-income students to have free theater experience in Peoria this holiday season. First, the news stories from the December 11th weekly edition of the West Valley View. Desert Edge takes 5A state championship by Joe Mahue, West Valley View staff writer. Desert Edge's football program could be called turbulent. In the off-season, the team and its coaches were suspended, disqualifying them from the playoffs. The decision was repealed. Now, they're the state champions, defeating their rival, Cactus, 28-19. Desert Edge head coach Henry MacArthur said he is excited for the team. "I'm proud of the kids," MacArthur said. "They earned it. They're the ones who put the work in, put their bodies on the line, and dedicated themselves to this team in a major way. I'm really happy for them, and happy that they got to really reap the benefits of the work they put in." Desert Edge immediately set the tone of the game, with quarterback Blake Roskoff finding receiver Malachi Mwala for an 84-yard touchdown and giving the Scorpions an early lead. From there, the game slowed down due to numerous turnovers from both sides, with Cactus fumbling the ball four times, losing three of them. MacArthur said the team relied on this defensive effort throughout the season to get to the state championship. "We've leaned on those guys all year," he said. "They knew they're the older group, the more experienced group. So I told them from the beginning, from before the first game, that this group is the group that we have to lean on to win the state championship, and that's what happened." The reliance on the defense turned into instant offense as Desert Edge linebacker Joshua Hoppas recovered a fumble and ran 74 yards to score, giving the Scorpions a 14-0 lead into halftime. Coming out of the break, Desert Edge continued its momentum as the Scorpion offense found themselves in striking distance. Roskoff rolled to his right and scrambled 25 yards for a touchdown. Later in the quarter, Roskoff dumped the ball off to ATH Elijah Sherbin Fox, which the receiver took 74 yards for another touchdown. Now leading 28-0, Desert Edge's defense loosened, allowing Cactus's offense to rally into the red zone late in the third quarter. Tristan Varga punched it in from 3 yards out, finally getting the Cobras on the board at the end of the third quarter. Once the final 12 minutes rolled around, Cactus's sense of urgency kicked in. After a defensive stop, Cactus again found itself in the red zone, with Varga getting in. Texas A&M commit Jamar Beal Goins blocked the point after attempt, leaving the score at 28-13, with just over 5 minutes left in the game. Cactus stood tall, forcing another Desert Edge punt, and rallied again down the field. The offense slowly inched closer to the end zone, with running back Tajon Player powering it in for a third unanswered score, with under a minute left in the game. The Cobras' field goal unit came on for a point after attempt that would make it a one-possession game, but Desert Edge slammed the door shut as Beal Goins blocked his second kick of the day and winning the state championship for the Scorpions. MacArthur was reminding us of the legacy we're going to leave, Sherbin Fox said. When we leave, the seniors and juniors and all those upperclassmen, we get to look back at what we did as football players, and this is what we did, winning at ASU. It got kind of nitty-gritty and close, but I'm glad we've got it done. That was Desert Edge Takes 5A State Championship. Next, TUHSD responds to spending spree allegations by Joe Mahue, West Valley View staff writer. Tolleson Union High School District Superintendent Jeremy Callis responded to a report from the Goldwater Institute alleging the district blew over $75,000 on multi-day summer retreats at four-star resorts in Sedona and Tucson, saying that it was out of spite from a former attorney. The allegations were brought forward by Chris Thomas, former Arizona School Boards Association attorney, now Goldwater Director of Legal Strategy for Education Policy. During Thomas's time with ASBA, and even afterward, he was an attorney who would give advice, not just my district, but other districts' legal advice. Callis said, now he is using his insider information to come back and attack everybody that he thinks has wronged him. That's unethical, and that's a bar violation. I'm leaving it up to my incoming governing board in January on whether or not they want to pursue that. Callis responded to every point the article made, saying that he and the district have been transparent throughout the process of Goldwater's proverbial investigation for a second time, as the agency published a similar article earlier in the year, and that the district has been cooperating with state statute. When they came out with the original article, they actually never picked up their public records request. Yet, we had it ready for them, Callis said. They didn't pick it up, but they released the article anyway and took their first shot. They've now finally picked up all the information that they've requested, and so now they're resurfacing the same topic again. First, the article states that the two-day retreat in Tucson, held at the J.W. Marriott Star Pass Hotel, cost the district upwards of $55,000, with $22,000 going towards catering costs. While on the Tucson retreat, as well as another retreat to Sedona, the district was meant to host recorded meetings with logged minutes discussing pertinent topics about the coming school year. According to Goldwater, the district did not record the meetings, posted vague minutes, and had board members only stay for a small portion of the board meetings. One of the gripes the investigation had with the district is that Thomas said that it could have hosted a local meeting for much cheaper. Callis said that it is per state statute that the district must travel outside of a 50-mile radius, hence the reason for the retreats in Tucson and Sedona. The locations of the four-star Star Pass Hotel and Hilton Sedona Resort at Bell Rock were also chosen with intention, Callis said. The Star Pass is the location for the Arizona Association of School Business Officials Conference, making it an ideal place to host a retreat, not because Tucson is a tourism hotspot, as Goldwater alleged. I got nothing against the University of Arizona Wildcats. I just don't see how they're calling Tucson a hotspot, Callis said. I'll take Phoenix in the middle of July, before I'll take Tucson in the middle of July. We have several members of the leadership team that are also going to the Arizona Association of School Business Officials Conference, myself included, Callis said. There's over 1,000 people statewide that show up for that conference. they book out the entire Star Pass just for conference. So, the idea that we're the only ones who have been at Star Pass, everybody goes to Star Pass. Every single summer, that same time in July, you're going to find the conference down there, and all the districts are down there. And Thomas knows this because Thomas has been a part of these organizations for a long time. So that was the reason for me taking Star Pass. Callis admitted that some of the board members were not present for all of the meeting times, as it was hard to keep their participation, but that he and the board would not leave until the agenda was complete. It's not for me to hold the board members accountable. It is for the community to hold the board members accountable, Callis said. I report to the board. So for me, whether I have all five members there or I have one member there, I still need to get my agenda completed. If I say we're not leaving that place until we have a strategic plan, that's my responsibility. The strategic plan gets done. Even if I don't have my entire board there to bless it, we need to finish the strategic plan. And that's exactly what we got accomplished. Callis ensured that these expenditures have not taken away from the district's dedication to increasing factors like teacher salary. Callis said that the district has become the one of the highest paying districts in the state and was the first district to go over a base salary of $60,000 per year. It's disheartening to see Thomas do this because of his relationship with school districts, and then to come out and now using this as a way to prove his worth for Goldwater. That's very disheartening, Callis said. Just being someone who's known Chris for such a long time, that's very disheartening to see. I just think it's him over-sensationalizing this topic, which is just really uncalled for and unethical. That was TUHSD response to spending spree allegations. Our next article, Residents Concerned About Citrus Gateway, by Alicia Ventner, West Valley View staff writer. The Goodyear Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing regarding a major amendment to the city's general plan for approximately 267 acres at the southwest corner of North Citrus and West Roosevelt Roads on December 4th. The proposed major general plan amendment would allow the city to rezone and develop the property as a flex zone development, including commercial, business park, and industrial uses. Furthermore, it changes the future land use category from neighborhoods to business and commerce. The vacant, undeveloped desert land is zoned as Planned Area Development, or PAD. It is south of the I-10 and in the Luke Air Force Base flight path, which encourages non-residential development. Wendy Riddle, representing Barry Riddle LLC, spoke on behalf of the applicant, Kermit Rankin of Rankin Real Estate LLC. The architect for the I-10 Citrus Gateway project is the Butler Design Group, and its vision, she said, is very high quality. We're really excited about the type of employment that can be drawn here, she said. Principal Planner Guadalupe Ortez Cortez requested a major amendment before the Goodyear Planning and Zoning Commission. If the plan were to move forward, which would require approval from the Goodyear City Council, the applicant would move forward with their application to rezone the property from Las Palmas PAD to Business Park District with a PAD overlay. This overlay would allow for flex light industrial park and general commercial zoning in some regions of the property. The proposal to amend the land designation for the approximate 267 acres from neighborhoods to business and commerce supports the prosperous and innovative fundamental strategy of the general plan by diversifying the economy and responding to market shifts, Cortez said. The site is not directly within the Luke Air Force Base day-night noise level, a zone that is greatly limited in terms of land use aside from employment uses per Arizona revised statutes to protect the mission of the military base, according to the Goodyear General Plan. However, it is adjacent. Representatives from Luke Air Force Base provided city staff with a response, indicating that the request for this major amendment will not have a negative impact on their operations. We got some pretty exciting improvements that we're working on through this zoning application to ultimately complete Roosevelt Road with its own frontage road for the neighbors. That is an ongoing dialogue that we are having, she said. During the public hearing, four speakers expressed concerns over loss of views, traffic, building height, safety, and desire for commercial businesses and restaurants. One speaker spoke in support of the project. Alma Olivares, a Goodyear resident, spoke at the meeting, and she expressed how she was not against the project, but wanted to reinforce the importance of safety for the existing residents as the area develops, as well as her reservations for tall buildings in the area. If this project becomes a reality, I'm surely going to miss my mountain view, the winter sunrise and sunsets, and sitting on my front porch watching the storm or rain coming, because tall buildings won't allow us to see that anymore, she said. A second public hearing was held on December 10th. The hearing before the Goodyear City Council is 5 p.m., Monday, December 16th, where a final decision will be made on the proposal. That was Residents Concerned About Citrus Gateway. Next, Glow on Monroe Parade Returns to Buckeye by Alicia Ventner, West Valley View staff writer. The 21st annual Glow on Monroe Parade returns to Buckeye on Saturday, December 14th, bringing festive lights, displays, vintage vehicles, creative organization floats, and performances to the city's downtown. The parade begins at 6:30 p.m. and runs from 2nd Street to Eason Avenue. This is the second year that the city has managed the parade, with Buckeye Main Street Coalition previously putting it together, and it expects 75 local organizations to participate, said City Events Manager Kim Anderson. Tradition is important in Buckeye, Anderson said, and as the city tweaks and expands the historic parade, it intentionally considers the residents' expectations before making any changes. That being said, any resident who came to the parade 20 years ago will see a much larger celebration than one they may remember from the past. We've tried to keep the core value and the tradition of the parade and all of our events alive, while also increasing them to accommodate the number of people that are moving to Buckeye and call Buckeye home now, and also expanding what we can provide to make it new and exciting, Anderson said. We know they have a lot of options to go to different events in other cities, and so our goal is to provide an opportunity for people to stay in their hometown and celebrate what makes Buckeye great. More than 100 vehicles and several more people riding on floats or marching in bands, together bringing Monroe Avenue to life with lights and entertainment. A master of ceremonies will unveil each display and organization as they travel down Monroe Avenue. The city expects the parade to last approximately 1 hour, and towards its end, Santa will arrive in a Buckeye fire truck. Afterward, guests can take free photos with Santa in front of the 32-foot-tall holiday tree at 6th Street Plaza. It shows a lot of people that are new to Buckeye what Buckeye stands for, and that we're really community-oriented. Even though we are a very large city in terms of land mass, we want people to feel at home here, and everyone is welcome, Anderson said. Arizona Public Service, a company that generates energy for approximately 1.4 million Arizonans, is the sponsor of the parade. The business sponsors parades across the valley and have been among the main contributors to Buckeye's annual celebration since its formation. Historically, the event has always been on the second Saturday of December. You'll see everything. APS will bring out a large boom truck or something that they have in service, and they will decorate it and bring it in as part of the parade. We also have a lot of local schools that participate through the marching band, Anderson said. They'll decorate their instruments with lights. We'll have local companies that will participate as well. We get a lot of local Buckeye businesses. If you go, it's the 21st annual Glow on Monroe Parade. It's at 6:30 p.m., Saturday, December 14th. It's Monroe Avenue, starting at 2nd Street in downtown Buckeye, and the cost is free. Now we go to the December 11th weekly edition of the Wickenburg Sun. First article, Denied Again, by Kirk McKnight, editor. During the November 18th session of Common Council, the motion to approve Resolution 2355, which would have approved a development agreement with Wickenburg Housing, LLC, an affiliate of Gorman & Company, LLC, for approximately 15 acres of vacant land at the southwest corner of West Wickenburg Way and Saguaro Drive, failed with a 3-3 vote. Had the agreement been approved, the town of Wickenburg would have served as a pass-through lender for a $10 million loan to the developer from Maricopa County. Last Friday, December 6th, Council held a special meeting to approve Resolution 2355, authorizing the mayor to execute the agreement in substantially the form on file with the town clerk, with the exception that funding may be reduced from $10 million down to $4 million if the county reduces the amount awarded, according to the town website. Following an executive session that lasted over an hour, Friday's special session resumed, and several residents voiced their objection as to why the session was even taking place. "Why are we back here?" asked resident Goji Gay. "I'm speaking for myself right now, but I don't think I'm the only one who feels like we have not been heard by the council members. I can't even understand how this has even gotten this far." Gay also noted the lack of need for a 208-unit apartment complex, emphasizing the number was far too large. Resident Sharon Poli, whose property lies near the proposed 15 acres, said, "We cannot promote Wickenburg as the team roping capital of the world for the renowned Western heritage while at the same time urbanizing it by building large apartment complexes." During call to the public, former Wickenburg Mayor Everett Sickles said, "What is the recourse of the people of this town or any town when they said they don't want what's going on? How many people here have gotten up and said, 'We really want this. I agree we want low-income housing. We just don't want it there and that big.'" Perhaps in response to the residents' question over the amount of apartments, Gorman's Arizona Market President Sally Schwinn said, "We know as a fact Foundation for Senior Living, or FSL's, single-family development with only 12 single-family homes had over 400 people apply initially for those homes. We know there's a need, and we know that there is significant interest in the project, and we know that we can build a project with the wonderful residents of this community." Before the motion was called to a vote, each person on the dais voiced their opinion on the matter. Mayor B.G. Bratcher, echoing the sentiment of those concerned with the number of units, said of Gorman, "I believe what they're trying to do is too much on too little usable ground. I'm very concerned about playgrounds, parking. It breaks my heart that we're in this position and we have to make this kind of decision." Vice Mayor Brian Jones, who was the only remaining yes vote on the dais from the November 18th meeting, said whether we pass the development agreement or not, and whether we decide if it's $4 million and an IGA Gorman gets to use or doesn't, that doesn't change the fact that there are going to be apartments there pending the judge's ruling. My intention tonight is to hopefully vote yes and have a development agreement, hoping that there's money available. However, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, and we've had our chance. We've had our say. Newly elected Councilmember Sean Clark said, "This is the crux of why I wanted to jump on this council. This issue started with the original zoning ordinance, was not followed, and this can has been kicked down the road year after year. Unfortunately, it's not an isolated incident. At some point, you've got to draw the line. You've got to make a decision on what's right and what's proper, and the way I read that statute, there's a very clear way to move forward, and that's how I intend to move." Newly elected Councilmember Margaret Nyberg said, "I think it's been poorly handled from the very beginning, with former town manager Erno and assistant town manager Swan. I don't think things have been handled out in the open the way they should have been. They should have been discussed from the very beginning and worked together with the people and this council. This project that could have been very good has turned into a battlefield, which is really sad to see." Councilmember Art Rubash, who voted against the agreement during the November 18th meeting, said, "I know Vi Willick very personally. This is not her vision. This is not what she wanted. She would never want this in a million years. It's a super easy decision for me to not take the money and not go forward." When Bratcher asked for a motion to be put forward, Jones complied, and the motion was seconded by Clark. When the motion was put to a vote, Vice Mayor Jones was the only one of the six with an assenting vote. Mayor Bratcher and council members Clark, Nyberg, Rubash, and Christy Bedouin all submitted dissenting votes, causing the motion to fail 1-5. Councilmember Becky Hayes-Rovey, being a member of the Willick Foundation Board of Directors, recused herself from the action due to conflict of interest. That was denied again. Next, WCB Talks Trash Pickup by Kirk McKnight, editor. The Wickenburg Conservation Foundation, or WCF's Clean and Beautiful Program, or WCB, generally does 8 desert cleanups every year. According to WCF Board President Bernadine McCollum, cleanups on Vulture Mine Road and near Vulture Peak have yielded 10,500 pounds of trash being picked up, and those taking place in Box Canyon have yielded upwards of 16,000 pounds. "Some of them have gotten better, and some of them have gotten worse," said WCB Committee Chair Judy Rice. "Box Canyon has shown a fair amount of improvement. We have a dumpster there, and then we have our ambassadors who are there 2 hours Saturday and 2 hours Sunday. Those ambassadors hand out bags, talk to people, encourage them to clean up and use our dumpster, and it's working. The Constellation area became a real problem 3 years ago when people were abandoning their RVs and trashing it. We increased our activity to include Constellation." According to Rice, following a cleanup at Vulture Peak last April, when the group left, they were all happy. However, not long after, the group was out looking for trash and encountered a gentleman who asked if they had been out to Vulture Peak. "We went out there and there were 11 vehicles," said Rice. "Several were abandoned, and several had people living in them. The problem isn't just people throwing trash out their window or their ATV. Now the problem has gotten more serious. We want an awareness in this community about this. People were shocked Saturday when they went out there. They just couldn't believe that was happening. The people in the community need to become aware of some of the changes that are occurring. abandoned vehicles, drug use, homelessness, and it's in our backyard. Recognizing the impact the trash has on tourism, WCB has even received grant money from the town to promote tourism, according to Rice. Our goal was to have our public lands cleaner and safer for our tourists, said Rice. Trash definitely is a deterrent to people coming into camp. People are afraid of drugs, and they should be. The safety issue is a big one for the people. We ride our horses. We have ATVs out there. The drug paraphernalia is alive and well. The impact of the problem is pretty significant. According to Rice, WCB has been working very closely with Arizona State Land Development and has a very good relationship with them. We are currently working on developing an improved process for addressing trash dumping on the state trust land, said Arizona State Land Department Public Information Officer Lynn Cordova. The department is ultimately responsible for cleaning up litter and illegal dumping, but there are no routine pickups of trash. This is a complicated matter due to the consistency of dumping around the state, but we are working diligently to address this issue. WCB has also received help from BLM, or Bureau of Land Management, which has allowed groups like WCB to put up signs and a dumpster on the property. BLM Arizona has experienced an increase in illegal dumping on public lands in recent years, said BLM Public Affairs Specialist John Chris Wonderly. This can create a strain on already reduced resources and staff availability. Illegal dumping can occupy a large portion of staff time and creates cost to American taxpayers as money is spent patrolling and cleaning up dump sites. It also negatively impacts natural and cultural resources on public lands. Other groups, such as Maricopa County Parks and Recreation, have 3- and 5-yard dumpsters in their parks. We have had the public leave their residential garbage, such as mattresses and such, in them, said Maricopa County Parks and Recreation Director Jennifer Waller. The other program we have, in addition to our cleanups, is our ambassador program, said Rice. We do a lot of PR and a lot of positive interactions with the ATVers. They take our bags or show us the bags they bring. Our experience has been very good from that. In the year, we've had 120 ambassador hours and 2,000 contacts with people we've talked to, people in cars. We've made a big impact there. In addition to the ambassador program, WCF also provides a desert awareness class, which saw 250 children, grades 3 through 8, attend last year. We could pick up trash all day long, but we're trying to make a difference in helping prevent it through our ambassador program and our desert awareness program, said Rice. Receiving grants from groups like the Willick Foundation, Arizona State Parks and Trails, and Bearcat Manufacturing, groups like WCF and its WCB program are looking for an increased public awareness of the problems around the area. My big goal is to have this somehow go to a state level, said Rice. We would like more people to help us as ambassadors. We're getting a lot of volunteers. We need media ambassadors, whether it's social media, on the internet, to help us blast this information and get it out to people. Next month, a desert awareness class will be held Friday, January 24th from 10 to 11:30 a.m. at the Wickenburg Public Library, 164 Apache Street. The following day, Saturday, January 25th, WCB will be having a desert cleanup from 9 a.m. to noon at a site to be determined. For more information, email wickenburgtrails@gmail.com or visit wickenburgtrails.org. We take a brief break here to remind you that you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour news and information service for people unable to read or hold print material due to a disability. and this is the West Valley News Digest. We now go to the Glendale Independent. Our first article, Glendale buys ground floor of VAI Resort Garage for nearly $18 million. Posted on yourvalley.net, Glendale Independent, December 12th, by Richard Smith. The Glendale City Council closed out 2024, much as the entire year went, with one more controversial topic discussed in an afternoon workshop then voted on that night. And for one last time, the agenda item passed with a 5-2 vote. On December 10th, Mayor Jerry Wares and council members Leandro Baldenegro, Joyce Clark, Ian Hugh, and Ray Molnar approved a parking garage space use agreement with the VAI Resort to essentially buy 800 spaces on the ground floor of the resort's garage for just under $17.88 million total. I just want to acknowledge on behalf of Economic Development that we have explored this opportunity thoroughly, and we believe that the opportunity relative to our economic strategy for growth in the Sports and Entertainment District is satisfied by this opportunity, Economic Development Director Jesse Pedersen said during the voting meeting. Council members Lauren Talmachoff and Bart Turner voted against the proposal because of the cost to taxpayers without certainty of monetary benefits and because of the timing of the workshop presentation and vote. During the workshop, Talmachoff asked Pedersen how city staff quantifies the value of the parking spaces. Pedersen said city-managed parking floor could better attract Class A office space to the 11.5 unimproved acres of city-owned land next to the VAI garage. As far as a tangible dollar figure, Pedersen said at this point it is premature to answer. We don't have a single agreement in place to even generate a single dollar of revenue off these 800 parking spaces. VAI's got over 3,000 parking places to park people in, Talmachoff said. We're taking the risk that somebody, sometime, is going to need to acquire these parking places from us to use them. I believe that's a risk. Turner said the proposal seemed wrong to him in so many different ways. He pointed out that a couple months ago, Glendale had the conversation of doing a public-private partnership with VAI and building a garage together, then investing in the land together. This also was Clark's and Hugh's last vote as council members. The city has no pressing need for these parking spaces. We don't know anybody that has a pressing need. I'm betting that there's a better than 50-50 chance that there won't be a pressing need, Turner said. It's not right for us to take $17.5 million out of the budget on our way out the door and stick it to the incoming council members to balance budgets in the future. Talmachoff and Turner said the short timetable for discussing and voting on this big money item appears to go beyond the near certainty of an approval vote. To them, it appears to be a gift to VAI. There is no path to solvency in this proposal. We're just leasing parking spaces we have no use for. And honestly, I think it is a way to move money out of the taxpayer's pocket and into a developer's pocket, Turner said. I think this is risky and unfair to our taxpayers. I think it's highly speculative. Worker Power, a 501c4 social welfare organization that led efforts on the unsuccessful Proposition 499, also honed in on the gift narrative. In November 2023, two taxpayers supported by Worker Power filed a lawsuit against the city of Glendale claiming its proposed tax benefits for VAI Resort violated the Arizona Constitution's gift clause. If trying to grasp everything that is transpiring between the city of Glendale and VAI Resort feels like whiplash, you're not alone, stated Brendan Walsh, commenting on the latest developments in Glendale in a press release December 10th. It seems that the wise decision would have been for the city of Glendale to negotiate the terms of the sale of land for a parking lot, including spaces designated for city use, at that time of the original purchase agreement. Glendale purchased about 19.7 acres on the southwest corner of Cardinals Way and 91st Avenue. In July, VAI Resorts purchased 8.25 acres from the city to construct a private parking garage with 4,250 spaces. The garage is under construction. Purchasing these spaces will provide options to the city to make available additional parking to assist in the successful bidding for mega events, Pedersen said. On the ground floor, 600 spaces would be available to the city at all times, and 200 uses available for city from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. The opportunity to be able to secure these spaces in this area for less than $1.36 per day per space is a significant opportunity for the growth that is taking place in that area, Pedersen said. Tolmachoff questioned if it was feasible it would increase the value of that land by $1.56 million per acre, or $35 per square foot. Glendale is selling the parcel at $21 per square foot. Do you think there is any scenario where this adds $36 a square foot of value to the remaining parcel? Tolmachoff asked. Tolmachoff said she can't think of any parcel in the West Valley that would sell at $57 per square foot. The initial agreement is for 25 years for a user fee of $14.88 million. Glendale then has the option to pick one or two renewal terms, both priced at $1.5 million. I think it's difficult to say did it add inherent value to the land itself without understanding the revenue implications to the city long term over the 45-year period by having development that pays different types of fees and taxes back to the city. As we go to sell that land, we'd be looking for opportunities for things that drive the revenue, City Manager Kevin Phelps said. Technically, City Attorney Michael Bailey said the city does not have the right to lease these spots, but can assign them. Turner said this $17.5 million is not going to make or break the resort, which has more than $1 billion invested already. He also commented on the irony Glendale did not have the money to rebuild Velma Teague Library for a little more than $17 million, but had this money for a speculative project. He said he thinks the Goldwater Institute will and should look into it. Molnar disagreed with Turner. I see this as part of a larger process, a larger deal, Molnar said. That's really what I'm most concerned about, is getting it online and creating revenue. Joyce Clark said this is an investment over 45 years. Westgate's owner is consuming buildings and parking spaces in the area. Parking will come at more of a premium. I don't think it's a risk. I think the risk is in not having those parking spaces for VAI for the city to use, Clark said. She also presented the agreement as a gradual expenditure of $17.8 million over the course of 45 years. However, as Tolmachoff pointed out, and Bailey confirmed, the initial $14.875 million payment by the city to VAI is due upon certificate of occupancy, which is projected to be in September 2025. That was Glendale buys ground floor of VAI Resort Garage for nearly $18 million. Now from YourValley.net, Peoria Independent, TSMC pushing prices up for land being bought by home builders by Philip Haldeman, posted online December 12th. More than 6,000 people are expected to be employed at the new Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, Fab, in North Phoenix, and home builders have responded to that housing need throughout the region. Interstate 17 and State Route 74 corridors have seen increased activity during the past year, with big-name home builders either purchasing or putting in plans for more than 20,000 units on more than 7,100 acres. Experts say the activity will continue to lead to more area development for years to come. Much of this planning has revolved around the Arizona State Land Department, who has control over millions of acres throughout the state, in which beneficiaries like public schools receive the proceeds from state land sales conducted through public auctions. Arizona State University real estate professor Mark Stepp said there has been a concentration of activity because of expectations from TSMC. There currently is not much housing near TSMC, and more state land in that area is being bought with that ecosystem in mind, including adjacent properties for the supply chain and housing, Stape said. So that is part of the driver, Stape said, and we are seeing demand being created for other activities associated with TSMC. Peoria has played heavily in trying to unlock Arizona state land for future development, as state land represents 75% of the vacant land in the city's planning area. The city is looking to position itself as a future employment hub. To help facilitate this, Peoria City Council in September approved general plan amendments officials say will help master plan two areas in the northern part of the city. Their target region is a massive swath of 8,300 acres of Arizona state land. Two areas known as North Peoria Gateway, adjacent to Vistancia's Commercial Core, and Peoria Innovation Core, spanning from Pleasant Valley north to State Route 74. Peoria City Planner Chris Jacques recently said during a council meeting the approval culminates a city vision that has been in play for several years. This is an important area for next-level economic and community development growth, he said. We've developed into a desirable community, but our coordination with the State Land Department, and most recently in the last 18 months, I believe is ushering in a new era in the city, and really a new legacy and a new chapter. About 2 months after the approval of the general plan amendments in Peoria, 280 acres of state land was purchased by Shea Homes via auction for $46.89 million November 25th. The home builder was the lone bidder. The land at the northeast corner of Dixoletta Road and the Litchfield Road alignment is zoned suburban ranch, which allows for 1 acre minimum lot size. Jacques said Shea Homes likely will apply to rezone the property to be in alignment with the underlying general plan designations of traditional residential and estate residential, which would allow for a density range of 2 to 5 units per acre and up to 2 units per acre, respectively. In a statement to independent news media, Peoria said the recent passage of the general plan amendments will shape the city for generations and ensure it has a say in how Peoria grows. Land in the region has become a hot commodity, resulting in highly contested ASLD auctions. In October, a bidding war erupted for a 274-acre parcel in North Peoria, where Pulte Group and Tri Point Homes Incorporated now plan to build 650 homes. the home builders fought through 38 bids to acquire the land near 83rd Avenue and Happy Valley Road for $63 million. The minimum bid was $46.275 million. Pulte Group and Tri Point Homes Incorporated outbid the original applicant for the state land, Shea Homes and D.R. Horton Incorporated. In a January state land auction, Lennar Homes bought about 80 acres near Pinnacle Peak Road and 43rd Avenue for $32.3 million, but not after a total of 164 bids and nearly doubling the minimum bid of $15.7 million. The Phoenix parcel is planned for 300 housing units. One big project currently in the works on state land is a mixed-use master plan community called North Park, envisioning more than 19,200 units on more than 6,350 acres from home builder Pulte Group. This is comparable in size to other large master plan communities such as Vistancia in Peoria. North Park is envisioned as a future-forward regional hub, strategically positioned to foster technological growth and innovation, the narrative stated. The land is just south of the TSMC property, bound on the north by Loop 303, to the west by the city of Peoria, the south by the Central Arizona Project Canal, and to the east by Interstate 17. An auction date has not been set, as the property is not appropriately zoned or appraised yet. With the new general plan amendments now approved in Peoria, allowing for a mix of land uses, including residential development, ASLD spokesperson Lynn Cordova said the department has received a number of inquiries from parties. She said more auctions to benefit ASLD's beneficiaries are likely to follow. ASLD sometimes zones land in advance of sale in areas where there is a large footprint of state trust land. We have found this practice enhances value to the trust beneficiaries by giving prospective purchasers and the surrounding community more certainty as to how it can develop, Cordova said. The state trust land purchased by TSMC and immediately surrounding trust lands were zoned in this manner. About 55% of Arizona's growth during the next 10 years is projected to be in the West Valley, according to Land Advisors Organization. Realtor Rebecca Durfee said builders' business depends on projecting future economic, infrastructure, and population growth, whether migration is due to employment, cost of living, or desirability of location. She is excited about the land purchasing activity because that means builders are betting on growth. And I do definitely believe that is coming, she said. Builders are looking for opportunity, and that requires land. And in a market where the buyers are favored, this is a time to get land at a better price than it has been in some years. Even if the builders hold off on building or reselling the land, it is a profit opportunity, Durfee said. If builders don't have land, they don't have a business, so they are banking on the growth and hoping their bet pays off, she said. They may be wrong in their estimation that the population will boom, but I suspect they feel confident they are right, Durfee said. Honestly, I think they are right too. I am so optimistic about Arizona and Peoria specifically. The growth is coming, both in employment and population. The stronger housing market is coming. It's just a matter of time. That was TSMC pushing prices up for land being bought by home builders. Now from YourValley.net Surprise Independent. Low-income students to have free theater experience in Peoria this holiday season. Posted online December 11th. Nearly 300 students in grades 5 through 8 from low-income schools in Surprise will experience a holiday musical performance December 17th at Arizona Broadway Theater, 7701 West Paradise Lane. For many of these students, it will be their first live theater experience. The event is part of the 2024-25 In-Person Field Trip Initiative from Act One, a nonprofit that provides free arts field trips to low-income students and schools in the Valley. Students will be treated to a live performance of "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," part of Arizona Broadway's Theater's Theater for Young Audiences program, which introduces live performance to youngsters. This show is a joyful tribute to the holiday season and includes the wild adventures of a mouse, an elf, and a spunky little girl who just won't take no for an answer. Research shows that access to the arts is an essential tool for youth development and has been proven to improve physical, emotional, behavioral, and cognitive development in children, particularly those living in poverty. However, field trips are often the first things to go when Title I school budgets are cut, along with arts programs. Arts education field trips take students beyond the classroom to expand their imagination and are an essential component of a well-rounded education, said Dr. Beth Maloney, Executive Director at Act One. Although many arts venues offer students a reduced price, Title I schools do not have the resources to support ticket purchases and transportation. Act One addresses this equity gap by providing transportation and free admission to some of the most renowned arts and cultural experiences in the Valley. According to a 2024 report from the Arizona Department of Education, 644 Arizona schools currently offer no arts education, 39% of which are designated as Title I schools. The Act One immersive arts education experience isn't just beneficial for students. Teachers see distinct advantages in the offerings as well, Maloney said. Teachers often get emotional watching their students react during the art and cultural experiences provided by Act One, said Maloney. Each year, we search for partners who provide diverse, interesting, and relevant content for our students, which is invaluable because all students deserve access to the arts. And that concludes this week's edition of the West Valley News Digest. I'm Gayla, your volunteer reader. Please stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds of Arizona.